Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, February 15th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
stocks jump on reports Russia's pulling back troops from Ukraine.
Wall Street braces for the latest report on inflation.
U.S. authorities probe Wall Street firms over block trades.
And Microsoft wants employees back in the office by the end of the month.
New York fires over 1,000 city workers who refuse to get vaccinated. I'm John Tucker. The story straight ahead.
I'm John Stashower, and Schwartz, another loss for the Knicks. They fell in overtime. The Nets won to end their long losing streak.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures are climbing on reports from the Ukraine border. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures up 57 points this morning. Dow futures up 321, and NASDAQ futures up 264. The 10-year Treasury down 13 30 seconds, yield 2.03%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.59%. Nathan.
Well, Karen, we begin with the latest developments involving Russia and Ukraine. There are reports that Moscow will pull back some troops from the Ukrainian border after, it says, military drills are completed. Amy Morris has the latest from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The Interfax News Service says some units will begin returning to their permanent bases after they complete their military exercises, which are expected to wrap up on February 20th. Russia is continuing its largest drills in years in Belarus, drills that raised U.S. and European alarm about a possible military assault on Ukraine. The Kremlin has consistently denied it plans an attack. This, as Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says, he supports continuing diplomatic efforts with the West. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Amy, thank you. The news is bringing relief to markets this morning. There are hopes that President Vladimir Putin is indeed stepping away from a conflict. We spoke with retired Brigadier General Mark Kimmett about the situation.
We really don't know how he can step down from this, and I think it may well be that he's looking for an opportunity to step down and back off. But it's pretty volatile at this point, no doubt about it.
Retired Brigadier General Mark Kimmett spoke with our Washington correspondent Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Sound On. Catch the program weekdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, Karen, we saw a jump in equities following those developments on the border of Ukraine. Let's get the very latest on the market action in Europe live with Bloomberg's Max Ramsey in London. Good morning, Max.
Morning, Nathan and Karen. Yes, a real risk-on move. During the European session this morning, we were looking at losses ahead of the European cash equity open. But now strong gains. We're around 3 hours into the trading day. The Stock 600 up 1.1%. We see similar price action happening for U.S. futures too, up 1.4% on S&P 500 E-mini futures. NASDAQ futures up 1.9%. So we also see strength in Russian assets, the ruble, and a move away from havens. Treasuries declining, the U.S. 10-year yield rising 5 basis points, 2.03% the yield there. A bit of weakness coming through the dollar, down 0.2% on the Bloomberg Dollar Spot Index, and dipping on gold, down 0.9%, $1,855 per troy ounce. Live in London, Max Ramsey, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Max. The markets have certainly been impacted by geopolitical tensions, but risks tied to inflation and the Fed may not be fully priced in yet. That's according to Federated Global Chief Equity Strategist Phil Orlando.
All of this is weighing on the market to start the new year. We felt that there would be some risk. The market, dropped 12% or so in the first 3 weeks. We've bounced, but we are bracing for another move lower in coming weeks and months.
Federated Global Chief Equity Strategist Phil Orlando says a drop of 10 to 20% for equities is, quote, probably a healthy correction.
We're watching oil retreat from its highest level since 2014, Karen, as traders weigh an apparent cooling in the Ukraine crisis. There are also prospects for increased supply on the horizon. Checking prices now, NYMEX crude's down 2.9% or $2.74 at $92.70 a barrel. Brent is down 2.7% at $93.91.
On the economic front, Nathan, it's another day to focus on inflation. We get the producer price index for January this morning, and economists predict it rose 9.1% on a year-over-year basis. We get more from Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice.
U.S. inflation is running hot. In December, the producer price index rose 9.7% on a year-over-year basis, the second largest increase in data back to 2010. There's evidence, though, we could soon be in store for some moderation. Bloomberg Economics says costs may have peaked at the intermediate level of production, and the outlook suggests the headline number could be close to peaking. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinnie, thank you. And we'll get more on today's PPI report shortly when we speak live with Morgan Stanley Chief U.S. Economist Ellen Zentner. It's coming up at 6:15 a.m. Wall Street time.
Now, Wall Street banks are also in focus this morning. There's word U.S. authorities are investigating how they handle block trades. We get the story from Bloomberg's Lisa Mateo.
Bloomberg News has learned the inquiry is looking into how banks, including Morgan Stanley, execute block trades with help from outside market makers. It's part of a long-running probe into stock transactions typically big enough to move markets. The Wall Street Journal says Goldman Sachs also has received requests for documents. That doesn't, however, mean charges will follow. Neither the government, Morgan Stanley, or Goldman Sachs are commenting. In New York, I'm Lisa Mateo, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Lisa, thank you. We have a takeover in the chip industry this morning. Intel is buying Tower Semiconductor for $5.4 billion. It's part of the company's push into the outsourced chip manufacturing business. Tower is based in Israel, and Intel is up 1.3% in early trading.
Another big tech company is making news this morning, Karen, this time on policies tied to the pandemic. Microsoft is telling its U.S. workers they've got to get back to their offices starting February 28th. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett reports.
It marks a fresh attempt to get the software maker's operations back to normal as COVID-19 cases abate. The company says unless they have a special arrangement, workers should begin a 30-day transition period to get back to the office. Microsoft and other tech giants have struggled with how soon to get employees back in the office, and previous deadlines were pushed back. In September, Microsoft scrapped a goal of reopening on October 4th because the COVID-19 Delta variant was raging. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Charlie. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Interactive Brokers. They charge margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.58%, rate subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. This is Bloomberg. And it's now 6:07 on Wall Street, 17 degrees in Central Park. We've got an accident on the eastbound Cross Bronx Expressway. Details coming up in traffic. First, John Tucker with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. John.
Nathan, New York City has fired unvaccinated workers following a deadline. The story this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
More than 1,400 public sector workers in New York City were fired over their refusal to get vaccinated before the city's mandated February 11th deadline. Most were Department of Education employees. The terminations make up less than 1% of the city's 370,000-member workforce. About half of the 3,000 employees originally at risk for being fired decided to get vaccinated before the deadline. Mayor Eric Adams characterized the employees' termination as quitting, saying they're choosing to leave their jobs by not following the rules. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The Trump Organization's accounting firm says a decade of financial statements for Donald Trump can't be relied upon. The firm, Mazars, also says it won't do any new work for the company. A declaration by an accounting firm that it's dropping a client and backing away from prior financial statements is historically a red flag for that company's financial condition, not what it appears to be. Well, New York's attorney general is investigating what she says was a pattern of potential fraud involving the manipulation of valuations of key Trump properties. A high-speed Amtrak train headed from Boston to Washington with more than 100 passengers lost power. It got stuck in New York City for almost 7 hours. The assembled train left Boston on time yesterday morning, but got stuck in the Hunters Point neighborhood of Queens. The train was moving again as of 3:20 yesterday afternoon after a rescue engine arrived to move it into Moynihan Station in Manhattan. And a federal judge says he'll throw out a defamation suit filed by former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin against the New York Times. That comes even as jurors continue to deliberate it. The Manhattan judge said that Palin failed to present enough evidence. If the jury rules in favor of Palin, it would then be up to the Federal Appeals Court to choose between the two outcomes. And the European Union's top diplomat says he strongly believes a nuclear accord with Iran is in sight. An agreement would allow Iran to return to global oil markets in exchange for rolling back significant advancements in its nuclear activity. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, John. Coming up to 6:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stanshower.
All right, Nathan, Knicks back home from a 1-4 road trip. They blew leads in three of those losses, and in two of them, those leads were more than 20 points. At the Garden, they were up 11 on Oklahoma City, a team that's not very good when healthy, and the Thunder without their top two scorers. But sure enough, OKC came back and won, 127-123 in overtime. Two rookies led the way. 19-year-old Josh Giddey, 28 points and a triple-double. Trey Mann scored 30. Julius Randle had 30 and a triple-double for the Knicks, who have now lost 9 of their last 11. The Nets had lost all of their last 11. The skid is over, 109-85 over Sacramento. Ben Simmons, just acquired from Philadelphia, is with the Nets, but he hasn't played in a game since last summer. Nets coach Steve Nash on when his new point guard will make his Brooklyn debut.
That's on the performance team. You know, they're going to walk through an assessment and his return to play and ramp up and all that. You know, it's been a long period of non-NBA activity, so we'll see how they put his program together and how long it takes.
Nets visit the Knicks tomorrow night. Rangers host the Bruins tonight. Rangers' first game in 2 weeks. The ex-Met, Matt Harvey, will be on a witness stand today. A former employee of the Los Angeles Angels is on trial for contributing to Angels pitcher Tyler Skaggs dying of a drug overdose. It was earlier testimony that Harvey was involved. Novak Djokovic's first interview since the Australian Open deportation due to not being vaccinated. He told the BBC he understands the severity of the pandemic, but said the principles of decision-making about his body are more important than winning titles. Djokovic expected to play next month's tournament in California, but the French Open also has a vaccine mandate. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. S&P futures up 62 points. Dow futures up 366. NASDAQ futures higher by 275 points. 10-year Treasury down 15 30 seconds. The yield close to 2.04%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Sunshine only, low 30s today. We'll be in the upper 40s on a breezy Wednesday. By Thursday, we'll have afternoon showers and a high close to 60. Right now, it's only 17 degrees.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And U.S. stock index futures on the rise this morning. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 62 points. Dow futures up 370. NASDAQ futures up 279, or just shy of 2%. DAX in Germany is up 1.6%. 10-year Treasury down 14 30 seconds. Yield 2.03%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.59%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 3% on $2.85 at $92.62 a barrel. Bitcoin this morning, $44,230. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
And Karen, Russia's defense ministry says some troops would return to their bases after completing drills near the border with Ukraine. And demonstrators against vaccine mandates halted traffic at two major border crossings in western Canada, even as the prime minister there invoked emergency powers to end blockades. Sports: Nets and Wizards win. The Knicks and Warriors lose. On the ice, the Sharks fall to the Oilers. Global News 24 hours a day on air on a Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, John, thanks. We're coming up to 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and Rosalyn Matheson is back with us now, Bloomberg News Executive Editor for International Government, for the latest on what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. We heard John mention the reports that Russia could bring some troops back after drills are completed. What are we seeing at this point? Is actual troop movement back to bases happening now?
Well, there are some videos that are being circulated by Russian media that purport to show troops getting back on trucks, but Western officials are saying at this early stage there's still no tangible evidence of a pullback occurring and certainly little clarity on the size of what pullback might be occurring. These are troops who seem to be based particularly near eastern Ukraine, near the separatist areas of Ukraine, not in Belarus, which is a separate scenario where draws are occurring. So this would actually be quite meaningful if it's true, but also if it's significant in size and if they pull back to their permanent bases. But it's early hours yet, and it's far too soon to say.
Yeah, I suppose we're going to be watching more closely to see what happens with these massive military drills, some of the biggest drills that have been happening in years that are going on right now in Belarus.
Well, that's right. And it's not just exercises inside Belarus, which are very large scale. There's also naval drills occurring in the Black Sea. So you've got a large number of Russian warships in the area doing drills this week also. So you've got a whole lot of drills really around the periphery of Ukraine, both at sea and on land. And most of those are due to finish this coming Sunday, at which point Moscow has said several times it plans to bring those troops home as well. So we really need to wait and see what does happen in the early part of next week and whether Moscow makes good on those promises also.
It seems like some of the headlines that have been coming down have come at cross currents, Roz. We heard from the lower house of parliament in Moscow that they're calling on President Putin to recognize the Ukraine separatist movement in eastern Ukraine. What kind of impact could that have? Does that sort of muddy the waters?
Well, certainly it is a concerning signal because, of course, if Russia were to formally recognize these separatist entities in eastern Ukraine in the Donbass area, that potentially gives them a reason to insert themselves into those areas. Of course, Russia always denies that it militarily supports the separatists, although it's certainly they are backed by Russia. But if they move from that to a formal recognition of those leaders, then ostensibly that could give them a rationale to go in and say that they're acting in the interests of Russia and of those people and that they want to be part of Russia and therefore they are entitled to act. So that's one situation to watch very carefully. And certainly it just suggests again that these tensions are really far from truly over.
And I know you're watching the meeting now underway between Russian President Putin and German Chancellor, the new Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz. Can you tell us a little bit of what's come out of that meeting so far?
So far, it's pretty much perfunctories. The Russians are using that moment to repeat their claims that what the US and others have said about invasion scenarios is just paranoia on the part of the US and so on. We can expect those kind of comments to be repeated. The key thing is whether Putin uses this moment to really come out and say directly, firsthand himself, that he plans to pull troops back and de-escalate the situation. So in a way, it's less about the optics of what happens between Germany and Russia and just simply what comes straight from the Russian president in this moment of visibility today.
All right. Thanks for keeping us on top of what's happening in the Ukraine situation. Rosalind Matheson, our executive editor for international government for Bloomberg News, with us this morning. On top of the geopolitics, investors are going to be focused on inflation in the coming hours with the producer price index for the month of January due out at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Ahead of that, we're very pleased to be speaking this morning with Ellen Zentner, chief U.S. economist at Morgan Stanley. Ellen, it's great to have you on with us this morning. When we are expecting a bit of a drop, I think, in year-over-year producer prices, even as the monthly number, I think many economists are expecting to go up. What are you going to be looking for in terms of producer prices this morning?
Yeah, so I think, it may get into a little bit, too much detail how much economists dig into this number, but there are particular parts of the report, even though it's on wholesale inflation, there are particular parts that do translate into what we can expect for consumer prices, and especially for the PCE price index, which is the one that the Fed uses as its anchor. And so we'll look for some softening there if there's something that can help take some of the heat off of those PCE numbers that we get at the end of the month. But the pipeline is slowing. And I think that's important here. Inflation data that comes out of China then feeds through into our import prices, then PPI prices at the wholesale level, and then finally on to consumer prices. We're not at the peaks yet. We think that when we get this month's data, which will be in hand in March, that will show that we have rounded the corner. So I think we're going to continue to see some pressures here that are probably uncomfortable.
So you think that we're going to see peak inflation sooner rather than later, or is there more pain to come?
Well, Nathan, it's still going to be painful, right? But it will be slowing. The pace of increase will be slowing. And we think that's as we around the corner when we get that data in March and start heading toward the second quarter. It's not that we can breathe a sigh of relief. It'll look like, okay, this is one data point. We'll need a string of them. But a lot of the leading indicators are pointing to inflation having peaked. And especially we can see from our global supply chains index that the peak bottlenecks occurred in the fourth quarter, but it takes time to start to work through the system. So we're still talking about inflation being incredibly high, even, as we get into the middle of the year. But
really appreciate your insights, Ellen. Thanks again for being with us. Ellen Zentner, Chief U.S. Economist at Morgan Stanley. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. We are coming up to 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow, along with Nathan Hager. And we're just about 3 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Time for the five things you need to know to start your day. Brought to you by Interactive Brokers. IBKR Investment Advisors switched to Interactive Brokers for lowest-cost global trading and turnkey custody solutions. No ticket charges and no conflicts of your interests at ibkr.com/RIA. Up first, global stocks are rising after reports that Russia is pulling back troops from Ukraine. According to local media, Russia's defense ministry says some units will return to their bases after completing drills in the region. That's led to a relief rally on Wall Street. Joaquin Clement is head of investment strategy at Liberium Capital.
The market is launching what looks like a classic relief rally this morning. It's basically a broad-based rally by now, with the energy sector the least beneficial of this, given the declining oil prices.
And Joaquin Clement at Liberium Capital says crude is coming off an 8-year high this morning. And checking prices now, NYMEX crude oil is down 3%. It's at $92.59 a barrel. Brent is down 2.8% at $93.80.
Well, markets certainly have been affected by geopolitical tensions, Karen, but there are other factors not fully priced in yet, according to Federated Global Chief Equity Strategist Phil Orlando.
I think playing defense is absolutely word one right here, to use the football analogy. And it's not just geopolitical risk. You've got this spike in inflation to 40-year highs. We are bracing for a significant hawkish change in Federal Reserve policy.
Federated Global's Phil Orlando says a drop of 10 to 20% for equities is, quote, probably a healthy correction.
Well, speaking of inflation concerns, Nathan, we get another reading on U.S. prices this morning. Economists forecast January's producer price index rose 9.1% on a year-over-year basis. That data is out at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time.
On the M&A front this morning, Intel has agreed to acquire Tower Semiconductor for about $5.4 billion, part of the company's push into the outsourced chip manufacturing business. Intel's up about 1% in early trading.
And Nathan, Wall Street banks are also in the spotlight. There's word that U.S. authorities are scrutinizing how Morgan Stanley and other big banks handle block trades. Bloomberg News has learned it's part of a long-running probe into stock transactions typically big enough to move markets. Neither the government nor Morgan Stanley are commenting. And that's the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Futures are moving higher this morning. S&P futures up 92 points. Dow futures 370, and NASDAQ futures up 279. That's up almost 2%. 10-year Treasury down 13/32. The yield 2.03%, and the yield on the 2-year 1.58%. And the euro 1.1346 against the dollar. Bitcoin $44,200. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 6:33 on Wall Street, still at 17 degrees in Central Park. Delays building on the GWB. Details coming up in traffic. First, John Tucker with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Nathan. The Trump Organization's accounting firm says it will no longer stand by the financial statements for Donald Trump The story this morning from Bloomberg's Kaylee Lyons.
The firm Mazur says a decade of financial statements for Donald Trump can't be relied upon and that it won't do any new work for the company. A declaration by an accounting firm that it is dropping a client and backing away from prior financial statements is historically a red flag for investors, lenders, or other parties that a company's financial condition is not what it appears. It also can be a signal to regulators and other authorities that wrongdoing may have occurred. It comes as New York's Attorney General is investigating what she says was a pattern of potential fraud involving the manipulation of valuations of key Trump properties. Kaylee Lyons, Bloomberg Daybreak.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul and Mayor Eric Adams are denouncing the murder of 35-year-old Christina Lee as the latest in a string of attacks on people of Asian descent. Police say she was stabbed to death inside her Lower Manhattan apartment by a homeless man who followed her from the street into her building. Residents gathered in Chinatown to remember her and speak out against the killing.
As a father of five daughters, it scares me to even know that these kind of incidents are occurring out there.
The killing happened weeks after another woman of Asian descent was killed by a man who pushed her in front of an oncoming subway train at the Times Square station. Demonstrators against vaccine mandates halted traffic at two major border crossings in western Canada, even as Prime Minister Justin Trudeau used a law giving his government emergency powers to end blockades. The main border posts in Alberta and Manitoba were closed, with the commercial traffic to the U.S. blocked by semi-trailers and farm equipment. New York City fired more than 1,000 workers who failed to comply with the city's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. The over 1,400 workers who lost their jobs represent less than 1% of the city workforce and are far fewer terminations than expected. The city sent notices in late January up to 4,000 workers saying they had to show proof they got at least two doses of the vaccine or else they'd lose their jobs. Of those fired, 64% work for the city's education department. And a judge says he'll dismiss a libel lawsuit that former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin filed against the New York Times. The judge made the announcement while a jury continued to deliberate. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. Coming up to 6:36 on Wall Street, and John Stanshower has the Bloomberg Sports Update.
Thanks, Nathan. Another blown lead, another loss, so more of the same for the Knicks at the Garden. They led Oklahoma City most of the way at 1 point by 11. Thunder came back, won 127-123 in overtime. OKC, the worst offensive team in the NBA, and they were without their top two scorers, and yet they had little trouble scoring against the Knicks, especially their rookies, Trey Mann and Josh Giddey, who combined for 58 points. Julius Randle had 30 in his first triple-double of the year. Emmanuel quickly had a chance to send the game to a second OT, missed the game-tying three, and the Knicks have now lost 9 of their last 11. Their coach is Tom Thibodeau.
You know, Oklahoma City's playing hard. They're playing well. Their Chicago game, they had to lead most of the game. You know, same thing. So we knew we were going to be challenged. The thing that they do well is they drive the ball into the paint very effectively. So we knew that would be the challenge for us. You know, the guards got into the paint and created havoc, and that was a problem.
The Nets tomorrow night. Nets blew out Sacramento at Barclays 109-85 to finally end their losing streak at 11. Bruce Brown led the Nets 19.6 rebounds, 6 assists. James Harden just traded by the Nets to Philadelphia, will not debut for the Sixers until after the All-Star break due to his hamstring injury, and he's also out of Sunday's All-Star game, replaced by Cleveland center Jared Allen. The Nets traded Allen last year as part of the deal to get Harden. Rangers finally back on the ice tonight, their first game in 2 weeks. They host Boston. Odell Beckham, who had messy divorces with the Giants and the Browns, gets a Super Bowl ring with the Rams, but that knee injury suffered Sunday is reportedly a torn ACL, which would be the second in 3 years on the same knee, and Beckham is going to be a free agent. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. 6:37 on Wall Street, time to take a look at stocks, some of the names moving in the pre-market. Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta is with us on a risk-on morning on geopolitics, but a lot going on in the chip space this morning, Kriti.
Yeah, good morning, Nathan. You are seeing some green on the screen when it comes to the broader market. But to your point, some M&A action happening in the chip space. Let's start off here with Intel agreeing to acquire Tower Semiconductor. This is a basically circuit maker for semiconductors. It's an Israeli company in a deal for about $5.4 billion as part of CEO Pat Gelsinger's push into outsourcing the chip manufacturing business. So Intel, investors seeming very happy with that news. INTC is your ticker. 1.5%. Now, Tower Semiconductor doesn't trade on the U.S. exchange. It does trade on the Israeli exchange, and it is rallying about 41% on that. TSEM Space IT is the ticker for that stock, but it's not the only deal in town. Let's move from chips over to drinks. Why not? Post-Super Bowl, talks between Monster Beverage, this is the maker of energy drinks, of course, and Corona Brewer, Constellation Brands, about a combination. Well, those talks are progressing. That's according to people familiar with the matter, coming from Bloomberg reporting, of course. So MNST, which is Monster Beverage, up 3%. Coca-Cola, which I believe has a stake in Monster Beverage, KO, up 0.5%. And Constellation Brands, STZ, down 0.1%. But you're not seeing a ton of volume in that stock, so keep an eye on it.
All right, we'll do. And also seeing some surges on earnings as well?
Yeah, the earnings are still rolling in. Arista Networks is the big one here. The shares are jumping about just shy of 10%, 9.9% in pre-market trading. This comes after, of course, the cloud networking company gives a quarterly revenue forecast that exceeds those analyst expectations. ANET is your ticker there. What's interesting is that the earnings kind of reaction is so big, especially for a cloud networking company. The standards are very high when it comes to cloud. I'm going to end here, Nathan, with another company. Once again, we're going to go full circle back to semis with, of course, a note coming out from Cowen, which does rate Advanced Micro Devices, AMD, outperform, saying that the focus is shifting to solid long-term and multiple growth factors now that the semiconductor company has completed its Xilinx acquisition. So those words of confidence fueling AMD shares this morning, up 4% in the pre-market. Nathan.
Wow, lots going on in chips. Okay, Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta with the pre-market update. And as we take a look at stocks as a whole, ahead of the open on this Tuesday morning, definitely risk on geopolitics, positive headlines coming out of the crisis over Ukraine. Right now, S&P futures are up 64 points, Dow futures up 379. NASDAQ futures leading the gains right now, 288 points or 2%. The 10-year Treasury down 15 30 seconds with a yield close to 2.04%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunshine, low 30s today, upper 40s by tomorrow with a breeze. Could have some afternoon showers at the high close to 60 by Thursday. Right now, 17 degrees.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures are jumping this morning. NASDAQ futures are higher by more than 2%. We go to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Ken. That's right. U.S. futures are surging right now on reports that some Russian troops are returning to their bases. Dow futures currently up 400 points. S&P's gained 67, while NASDAQ futures gained by 313. The U.S. 10-year yield at 2.04%. Gold is down 16. Oil is under pressure, but Bitcoin is up by 5%. European markets are also in the green this morning and back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30. The producer price index and Empire Manufacturing. After the bell last night, Arista Networks reported shares are up 10% pre-market. And in deal news, Intel agreed to buy Tower Semiconductor for $5.4 billion. Wrapping things up, Oshkosh was cut to inline over at Evercore. Live from the First Republican News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. To hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
Good morning, Karen. Russia's defense ministry says some troops would return to their bases after completing drills near the border with Ukraine. Elon Musk gifted almost $6 billion worth of Tesla stock to charity. It's one of the largest philanthropic donations in history. And demonstrators against vaccine mandates halted traffic at two major border crossings in Western Canada, even as Prime Minister Trudeau invoked emergency powers to end the blockades. And in sports, Nets and Wizards win, the Knicks and Warriors lose. On the ice, the Sharks fall to the Oilers. We have Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. We're powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Karen.
All right, John, thank you. It is 6:49 on Wall Street, and we turn to news and science and technology now with a Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. It's brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, ranked a top 50 national public university by U.S. News and World Report, and a top 50 college for undergraduate entrepreneurship studies by the Princeton Review. Learn more at njit.edu. Now, here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. Hong Kong said it's overwhelmed by a growing Omicron outbreak, but there are no plans for a citywide lockdown to bring the number of cases back to zero. Hong Kong is searching for more hotels to use as isolation facilities. The American West mega drought deepened so much last year that it's now the driest in at least 1,200 years and is a worst-case climate change scenario playing out live. According to a study in the journal Nature Climate Change, a dramatic drying in 2021, about as dry as 2002 and one of the driest years ever recorded for the region, pushed the 22-year drought past the previous record holder for mega droughts in the late 1500s. The study calculated that 42% of this mega drought can be attributed to human-caused climate change. And Facebook claims it no longer collects and profits off users' faces through controversial facial recognition technology. Texas isn't buying it, though. The state sued Meta Platforms over claims its Facebook and Instagram platforms are still monetizing people's faces without their consent, as well as holding on to a facial geometry database compiled over a decade. Meta says the claims are without merit. And that's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. Nathan.
Thank you, Karen. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios. We're at 6:50 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include the Senate weighing support for Ukraine as Russia reportedly pulls some troops back, the White House looking to avoid gas price shocks in the event of an invasion, and President Biden's team apparently seeing limits to trade talks with China. For more, we're joined from our Bloomberg 99.1 studios in the nation's capital by Bloomberg Washington correspondent Joe Matthew, host of Bloomberg Sound On. Joe, great to have you with us this morning as we're seeing a relief rally for markets on these reports that Russia could be pulling some troops back. What's the level of relief at the White House and on Capitol Hill?
Well, it's a good question. Everyone's waking up to these headlines. There's just been a stream of headlines on the terminal here coming from Moscow this morning. Nathan, and it's about withdrawal. This is good. This is the exact type of scenario that we have been hoping for. But, you know, there is a great deal of distrust when it comes to Vladimir Putin. So we're going to have to wait to see actions beyond words here. And also keep in mind that while some of the drills have ended here and units from Russia's western and southern military districts are apparently packing up their equipment, they're loading trains, the Washington Post reminds us there are still some major drills left. More than 30 Russian Navy ships are doing live fire exercises in the Black Sea, complete with air cover, which does not sound like they're packing up their toys here as they prepare for what's being described as a major naval exercise. Nathan, Russia has about 40 ships in total in the Black Sea, about 500 combat aircraft within range of Ukraine. So this is not over yet. But if we see a continuation, according to Sergey Lavrov, this beginning of a pullback, this could be a very important day for geopolitics.
Yeah, obviously, we've seen a lot of headlines, as you say, across the Bloomberg terminal overnight. After we got a briefing on Capitol Hill from White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, do we know what came out of that? And what about this intelligence that Russia could invade as soon as this week?
Well, you know, that's what we had been hearing, that there were reports, at least, this did not come from Bloomberg, but reports that it would be Tuesday, that it might be Wednesday. And in fact, President Zelensky in Ukraine actually made a joke about that yesterday, which turned the markets as he was being ironic about making Wednesday a day of unity, since everyone seems to know when this is going to happen. Look, that was based on the best intelligence we had with regard to what we were hearing through back channels, and also knowing that Russia has a window here to operate. If they were to invade, they need to do that while the ground is still frozen. And it's a very expensive endeavor, Nathan, keeping 130,000 troops at combat-ready positions on the border with Ukraine. Just feeding all of those soldiers is in itself a major outlay for Moscow. So there is a thought here, or at least there has been, that if it was going to happen, it would be in the next week or two.
It makes you wonder whether this warning, these threats of, untested sanctions against mm-hmm. Russia, were there to be an invasion or even before, might have gotten through. What's the thinking in Washington as to the kind of pressure that the West has been putting on Putin?
Well, look, it's all coming to a head today with the new chancellor from Germany. He's there now. He's in Moscow. Olaf Scholz will be meeting with his counterpart in Russia. And this is a very critical conversation. It was exactly a week ago that he was here in the U.S. at the White House. And you remember the questions, some of which were not answered, at least in the way that reporters wanted him to fully support the end of Nord Stream 2 if there were a Russian invasion. President Biden essentially had to finish his answer for him, saying that, yeah, that thing is dead if Russia crosses the border. This is going to be a critically important meeting today with Scholz and Putin in the room. Is this the meeting that sets the off-ramp is the big question right now. Leon Panetta was telling Bloomberg yesterday on Balance of Power with David Westin that Putin is looking for any crack in the alliance. If he does not find it, Chancellor Scholz could find himself in a very important position here to steer Vladimir Putin off of this road and to one toward a diplomatic solution.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to continue watching as these diplomatic efforts continue. And speaking of, Joe, we've got some new developments when it comes to trade talks between the U.S. and China, indications that the Biden administration may be running out of patience.
Yeah, well, it might be time to turn away from this one. I mean, we're going to continue talking. According to our White House team, Jenny Leonard reporting on the terminal that officials are running out of patience and may, in fact, just turn away from the talks that we were involved in here. This is about the phase one deal that was just about this time last week making news that China is tens of millions of dollars short on some of the exports they were set to buy. U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai has been all over this, says she wants to focus on her negotiations with Beijing as the administration stresses the trade deal does not address our concerns with China's state-led economic system. It is likely, Nathan, that this will be left on the side of the road here because we're going nowhere with our talks. They will continue, but expectations are low.
All right, Bloomberg Washington correspondent Joe Matthew with us from the nation's capital. You can get much more on all these stories at Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg terminal, and get much more from Joe, the host of Sound On, airs weekdays at 5 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. You can listen in Washington at Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 6:56 on Wall Street. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. February is Black History Month, and every day this month we are celebrating significant moments in U.S. Black history. Now with your installment for February 15th, here's Bloomberg's Renita Young.
On this day in Black history in 1968, conductor Henry J. Lewis becomes the first African-American to lead a major symphony orchestra. He became conductor and musical director of the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra, which is a nationally recognized orchestra. From an early age, Lewis had a love for music and symphony orchestra. At 16 years old, he joined the Los Angeles Philharmonic and became the first Black instrumentalist in a major symphony orchestra. Later on in 1989, Lewis would become the principal conductor of the Netherlands Radio Symphony, a Dutch radio orchestra. That's today in Black History. I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Renita, thank you. And futures this morning, again, they're jumping. S&P futures up 66 points. Dow futures up 390. And NASDAQ futures up 301. That's up 2.1%. 10-year Treasury down 14/32nds, yield 2.03%. And the yield on the two-year, 1.58%. NYMEX crude oil falling down 3.7% on $3.58 at $91.88 a barrel. And we'll continue to watch the markets on Bloomberg Surveillance with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.